Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to On Screen Live. My name is Andrew Jupin, and this is our show for Monday, March the 31st, which reminds me, everybody, March is over. Tomorrow is April the 1st. Do not sanction any April Fool's buffoonery whatsoever. Put a stop to it in the office, at home, threaten divorce paper write-ups. Like, whatever you got to do, we got to put a stop to April Fool's Day. It's cruel, and anybody who's into it, man, you got to rethink your priorities. Just got to put that out there. Now, we got a lot to get to today. Going to bring in three fellow April Fools. Here we have Steven Sadak.
Not a fan of April Fools. And I think my priorities are right where they need to be, honestly. Yep. I was thinking about my priorities. I'm like, yeah, those are good.
Yeah. Yeah. You got some decent priorities.
Just okay.
It's just a shirt that says Hemingway on it.
Oh, no. It's an old man in the sea. If it goes, if you go down.
Oh, no, keep it right where it is,
dude. I stand it up.
Speaking of not standing up, you know him, you love him, Mr. Eric Siska.
Yes, I want to find that old man in the boat, right?
Yes.
I'll see where the dinghy is, dude.
But by the way, I'm a fan of April Fools. I want everyone to spread this message tomorrow. Maybe post it on our subreddit. I hate those bastards, right? say that I tragically passed away.
Oh, there you go.
Classic prank, dude.
Please say that I'm dead. Thank you.
Faking your own death, I think, is the oldest prank of all. It's what Jesus did.
That's true. And he came back for that bean dinner. No, the bean dinner was on the way out, right?
Yes, the bean dinner was on the way out. That was the last meal. They were like, Jesus, you can have baked beans or buffalo wings, whatever you want, buddy.
Right. It's like prison, right? You get like, you can have lobster and steak if you want, but he chose bean dinner, bean supper with his buddies.
Steve, any indication of what was consumed at the Last Supper out of curiosity?
It was a bunch of bread. Probably there must have been some meat somewhere. You know,
right? That's like what I'd like to think. Yeah,
some tapenade possibly.
Nice tasting menu. Maybe some tapas. Exactly.
Ooh, there you go.
I don't want to delay Chris, but I saw that. I texted you guys about the Last Supper.
Yes, I think
The Chosen. It's a trailer of Jesus being cool to Johnny Cash music.
Yep.
And I was laughing in the theater.
It's awesome. Speaking of laughing in the theater, and speaking of a dude who will flip the money changer's table, Mr. Chris Cabin.
I think you have to go with lobster and buffalo wings. Yeah. You gotta mix and match. I don't think you can go one way or the, like it's
sure.
The steak's too much. Heavy going into the death chamber. I don't think that's good.
But you're clarifying appetizers are available for your last.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh no, I think you get a clear. Well, you know what? There's no restrictions. So why not go for a 50 wings? And a lobster.
Some poo-poo platters.
The weird thing was Jesus wanted to have it at Barcade, but like the apostles just kept playing those 8-bit video games. And he's like, guys, over
can
here.
Can we put the burger time down? I'm going to be crucified tomorrow.
That got some information you might want to hear.
That suggests a fried ravioli, which I'm not a fan of. I'm going to be honest with you. But you know what? Let him have his day, of course.
Check this shit out. Going to read this one on the air. This is from Mark E. in the chat. They say, when they were in Iraq and their second go-around, which thanks for doing that, buddy, one of the interpreters got me with an April Fool's joke. They say, by telling them the president of Iraq was assassinated, went to look it up, and he started laughing at me. Seems like a pretty cruel joke for a military commander to play there.
Sure.
But see, this is what I'm talking about, dude. You're joking about fucking the president of Iraq being assassinated. Like, that could lead to some major shit.
That's really hard to hear as a troop, you know? Oh, they got to him before me. Or was this the new president?
Yeah, I don't know. It depends on where, what level we were.
A lot of context there. Missing here.
Yeah. I'm going to guess it was the sequel.
Got it.
Speaking of sequels, we have two in this week's Top of the Box Office. See if you guys can get any of these really quickly. First one is from 2001. This was a movie that I'm pretty sure most of us, if not all of us on this show right now, this was our first exposure to Wuxia cinema.
Oh, yeah. Crouching Tiger?
Eric Siska is correct. Nice. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. Look at that. Love
it's
that.
Great movie. I recently rewatched it. It's fantastic.
Really good stuff. Really good stuff. Next one is from 2010. This is Top of the Box Office. This day in 2010, March the 31st, 2010. This star is a child star who's now grown up, and she makes some movies and albums and whatnot. She's more of a pop star. And this is a movie about her dealing with her musician father, who ironically is not played by her real life musician father, a one hit wonder from the 90s.
It's obviously it's Miley Cyrus, but I don't know any of those movies.
Good enough, Steve. That's correct. It's the last song. You got a Hemsworth floating around in here.
Yeah, I don't know which one.
Is this what they played at the Last Supper?
That's the movie they watched. They were like, Jesus, you can watch whatever movie you want to watch, man. It's your day.
They didn't want Billy Ray Cyrus playing her dad again because he was the dad on the show that she was popular on. Right?
Yes,
that would
Hannah
make it
Montana.
Seem too much like the show, the movie.
Yeah, this is I think it's a Liam Hemsworth we got there. And Greg Kinnear is the father.
Oh, okay, wow. So they did a little dad swap.
Yeah, trade up from Billy Ray Cyrus.
I agree. I'd rather be raised by Greg Kinnear for sure.
Absolutely.
This next one took the top of the box office this day, March the 31st, in 2006. This is a sequel to an animated film. It's the first sequel of what would have become many.
Is it Toy Story 2?
Ooh, 2006, Steve. No, it is Ice Age, The Meltdown.
Yeah, baby.
Got it.
Yeah, man, that's Scrat, huh? We were trying to get him on t-shirts. Did he have his own, like, Hulu streaming cartoon, maybe?
They must have been some stupid thing.
I know they had, like, shorts in front of shit. It was, like, Scrat's Big Score and whatever.
Did that Dennis Leary military show get canceled yet? Or
Probably already did.
I haven't heard the word, but, man, I watched the trailer for it, and it is just TBC. Canceled.
What was that called? Good. Salute Your Shorts or something?
It was like they're in Sweden or something.
Going Dutch.
Yes. It's Parks and Rec, but during in the military, which is great. Yes.
This is our little light news of industry talk right now. We're going to look up to see if that show has been canceled yet. Oh, it says present still.
Okay.
We'll wait in here.
One more top of the box office. Just from this day last year, it was a very disappointing team-up movie.
Okay. What's the year again?
Disappointing team-up movie.
2024.
With some big stars.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Expendables 4?
Oh, no. Godzilla.
Oh, no. Yes. The boys.
That's a Godzilla X Kong. I prefer Godzilla XXX Kong.
That's right. This ain't your mama's Godzilla movie.
When they're stripping. I like
when
that
they
one.
Get it on, dude.
King Kong is like throwing his thong at people.
Yeah.
Oh.
Earth's hollow for a reason.
Because
they're
you're in trouble with that Godzilla X Kong because it wakes up. It starts with King Kong like waking up and taking a shower. Like, I'm not kidding. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm in trouble. Oh, yeah. The movie's in trouble. I'm in trouble. Everyone in the theater was in trouble. It was a bad movie. Have some okay movies floating around the box office here. Let's check out what was going on not an entirely embarrassing weekend at the box office. This is Highest Gross. Should say, of course, I forgot to do this at the top, but welcome back, everyone in the chat. Jeff McFarlane, Lee Real, Greg Bufato. Let's see. E. Simon Says 14. Oh, Super Rob.
Don't forget Sucked is back. I always like seeing Sucked in the chat. Absolutely. Thank you. Sucked.
Thank you, sir.
Tyler Tino. Do you pronounce that G, Tyler? Let me know, man. I'm so Rachel. I don't know if I said it yet, but French Toast 663. I like that. All right, so here we go. We got some stuff floating around the box office. In at 5 was a movie, man, You got which way the wind was blowing at South by, because no one was really talking about A24's Death of a Unicorn.
I'm going to take a victory lap on this. When the trailer came out, I was like, this looks fucking stupid as sin.
You were right, Steve Sadek. You get points on that, man.
Did any of us see it? I know I didn't.
I have not.
No. So we're judging it already, guys? Come on.
I think we're that bad.
I'm just tired of A24 watch-its, honestly. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
the small ones.
A good director, sure, I'm in. But like, just like a, it's an A24 movie. You like A24 movies?
They got
like,
A24 movie coming out with Dakota Johnson doing Hitched.
Hitch, nice. Rather. Yes, that's right.
So. Yeah.
Oh, really?
And they're doing the Paul Rudd Tim Robinson movie, which I am interested in.
That'll get you back on the Paul Rudd train.
I'm interested in that. But this one, I haven't even seen. Honestly, even the poster makes me turned off. Yep. Like that's the most I know about it is what the poster just showed me, and I'm like, no. How to Kiss Your Dragon? No, I'm not doing it.
There's a pretty decent new St. Vincent song on the soundtrack, but that's. As far as I've gone, but this, I mean, here's the deal too. 5.8 million on 3,050 screens, which is more screens than some of the films that did better in the top five.
I mean, they dumped this movie. I didn't even know it was coming out. Like I knew it existed and then like it kind of disappeared and then like it's out.
That was the week. This was the weekend for that because also like getting the Colette Sarah out. Cause like I heard nothing about it. I had only remembered hearing about it when Carry On came out. I remember reading, Daniel Deadwaller is doing another movie with him that is already done. I was like, okay, I guess it's happening.
And say the title so people know what you're even talking about.
A Woman in the Yard, which is we will see later. Yeah.
Because Colmet Sarah, no one knows what you're saying. You're like Gazutite or whatever.
Yes, I'm saying God bless you in a different language.
Well, I didn't know that it was a Jaume Colette Sarah movie until you said it yesterday. So that shows you what the advertising was doing.
Nothing.
Yeah, so anyway, this will come and go and you'll be able to rent it. Toot sweet. Chris will have a lengthier capsule review on this in a bit. But yes, the new Jaume Colette Sarah movie from Blumhouse and Universal, Woman in the Yard. Here we go with some more horror at the box office, 9.5 million. So this did a bigger opening than Hard Eyes and Companion, but not as big as Wolfman or The Monkey.
Oof. Okay.
So there's that going on.
Makes about sense. That's about the ballpark.
I read a review for this over the weekend, and I was like, that's what that movie's about?
Yeah. I've been trying to do a Steve Sadek method. I've been trying to avoid trailers. Like, I still do not know what the new P.T. Anderson movie is about.
I've been avoiding it
like the plague.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm trying to do that with all movies now, as many as I can, other than ones are in this one. And usually the ones that are in this one, I'm probably going to know what they're about anyway, just because I know.
Two fucking victory laps in one day. I love it. Everyone's coming to my side.
Yes.
Wait, what is your victory lap with this movie, Woman in the Yard?
The trailer thing. I've been saying it for years.
Off trailers for years.
We should mention that Steve is under the weather. He's got a little cold. He's not doing the, my dad plays in his pajamas at the casino now.
I can do it really well now. My dad plays at the casino at home.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's actually not bad.
He witnessed the death of a unicorn and got kissed by a dragon. And now he sounds like that for some reason.
And now he sounds like...
My daughter and I have tried other online casinos, but Betfair's the best.
So, right.
I like the context. You know, we got new listeners. They don't know these running jokes about local commercials.
the most hyper-local of commercials.
Important.
Coming in at number three... The Chosen, : Last Supper. So here we are. This is a Fathom event. $11.5 million.
Wow.
These clippers will come out for this.
I'm imagining ham and eggs, maybe a big pile of toast.
Oh, that could be. It was a breakfast, you're saying?
Yeah.
I'm sure we've had this conversation before. This is a TV series that they put on.
Correct.
On screen, right?
Did this air on any network, or is it like JesusFish.TV or something?
It airs somewhere.
Studios have like a TV network,
possibly.
It is wild that this is a thing in this country, right? Like this is a juggernaut. Look at this thing,
huge juggernaut. And, you know, the funny thing is though, so there's some other Last Supper movie that came out a couple weeks prior to this. Like, it's an actual movie, same deal. And apparently I was seeing some reports, some theaters were fucking it up and playing that movie and not this, The Chosen. Like, I actually won, like, total firsthand story. A woman I used to work with who goes to these things, takes her elderly Italian mother to all of them, you know. She even said, she was like, we were seated for the first two episodes of The Chosen. They're a big fan of the series. The theater played the wrong fucking thing.
So, like, what? We're talking about the fucking the Christmas Story in April? That's not going to work.
No, it was it's another movie about the Last Supper.
Oh, wow. I see.
So it's about, so Jesus is in it. So did anyone, how did you notice it was different?
Because one starts like a movie and the other one's got your fucking TV intro to The Chosen.
Wow, I can't believe The Chosen got Willem Dafoe back. That's odd.
What?
Yeah, hey, what's for dinner?
Guess who's coming to dinner?
Me, Jesus.
Man, do they show The Last Supper in that movie? It's been a while.
I think so. You got it. That's the big one.
That was where he got his mom to cameo. She's making the sauce in the background.
Yes.
That's the sausages.
Coming in at number two and tanking fucking hard, The Plane is crashed into the mountain for Snow White. A paltry $14.3 million, which represents a 66% fall. Ouch town for the budget.
And that has got nothing to do with the two words free Palestine. Let me be completely honest with you. No one wants to see this movie for a million different reasons.
Because who has nostalgia? No one has nostalgia for 1938 or whatever the fuck. Like,
well, actually, a lot of people have nostalgia for 1938. Not the right reasons, though.
Right, that's fair.
The rights of 1938.
Right.
Yeah, the stepping of 1938.
And the wrongs as well.
But yeah, dude, I mean, just like, I'm sorry, no one gives a shit about that story. No one wanted this movie.
Nope.
And you're blaming that girl. Eat a bag of dicks, dude.
Don't blame Rachel Zegler, is her name, right?
Yes.
Correct.
Blame those goddamn abominations in the trailer, those fake dwarves, CG.
They're horrific.
People. Like,
what
is going on?
No one wants to look at that for 2 hours.
Nope.
Well, because really vomiting. I'm taking my popcorn bucket at the movies and hacking up a lung in it.
Good thing there's free refills, because I'm going to pour this out to throw up in it and then dump that out.
I brought it over. Popcorn. I dumped it out. It all slithered out. You know how like liquidy shit does?
That's
and I had them refill it, and it was delightful.
I mean, if you want to fold in the Israel-Palestine shit with that, go right ahead. But the thing is you don't have a take on it. You don't like it's same thing with the Lilo and Stitch thing. It's just the same movie. You're just putting in the new effects to make it look like it's different.
Like people, I think, are getting hip. Also, like this isn't one of your powerhouse ones from the 90s.
Yes.
So like it just was an even larger ask of people. Like no one gives a fuck. I'm sorry.
Like our age. Yeah, exactly. Our age, people didn't like I've seen Snow White maybe once. Like it wasn't a movie that was in my house a ton. Isn't, you know what I mean?
Isn't it also wasn't there an didn't the movie that broke up Pattinson and Stewart, isn't that the Snow White movie
as
well?
Yes, yeah.
Well, yeah, we've already been here, and you made another fucking hit out of it that time.
But, Chris, that was a generation ago now.
Oh,
there's
God.
Young kids.
Damn it.
Kids don't watch old movies like that. When did that movie come out? Like 2015? That's an old man movie.
Sure, I guess so. So we'll go even way back.
And our president came off the mountain and weighed in on that scandal at the time, and we all appreciated that.
You know, I'll say, you know, I was kind of like whatever on that Spielberg West Side Story, but over the weekend, Chelsea and I were just looking for something to catch up on, and we watched that Hunger Games Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes movie, which Rachel Zegler is like the co-lead of, and like she's really good in that movie. Like, it's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination, but she is a competent performer. And again, just like, I wanted to go to bat for her about something because I'm not going to see that fucking Snow White movie.
No, exactly.
But like, again, just to blame this girl for your like corporate greed and ridiculous failure is so fucking pathetic. Huge corporation. Very sad shit.
I have not seen a single movie she's ever done. So there's no. That's right.
I think she's in that Shazam 2, by the way.
She is. She is in that one.
She's actually a better part of Shazam 2.
Did I see Shazam 2? Can anyone help me out?
No, we didn't do it for the show.
Eric.
I watched it for this, but not for the show.
Eric, I do think West Side Story is worth seeing. I do. I will go to bat for that one. I know
disagree.
You're crying a little bit. I know. Disagree. It's okay.
come on, Chris. Eric's not going to give a shit about a movie like that.
I've just tried. I'm trying here.
Is anyone waving a gun around? If someone's waving a gun around,
at the end, there is a gun.
Yeah,
how many bullets are in the gun? You know, the whole speech.
Okay, yeah, all right, I'll check it out.
There's a whole speech about a gun, that's right. Anyway, speaking of guns, a lot of guns in The Working Man, or A Working Man, coming in at number one off the top rope with $15.2 million. Not too shabby. This actually, so let's see where we are here. A similar size opening to Den of Thieves 2 from earlier this year, and it's got a $40 million budget. So this is doing just all right. It's at $30 million globally. It's doing just all right.
But look at this. Amazon, you could put a movie out in the theater and it actually makes money. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question or ask a favor? Can we solve this Alamo Union situation so I could watch this movie and drink a fucking beer for once? I had to go to a Regal and have a soda with the Working. That's not what I wanted to do.
Regal is not what I wanted to do.
Give those people their union and let me go back to that theater.
There's got to be other theaters that serve beer in Manhattan.
I'm sure.
Brown bag it. Come on, baby.
Brown bag it.
There is a bar at that Regal Union Square, but the problem is then you're just going up to that bar at the Regal Union Square going, could I have a Bud Light?
Yeah, you know, I was recently at Cinema 123, the by Angelica now, on 59th Street and 2nd, I think. They had beer. Yeah. They were serving beer.
They do. Yep. But again, the Alamo is actually just the closest movie theater to my house.
Here it is. That's okay.
And I enjoy it. And I would like
so
to go back.
Your solidarity with The Working Man only goes as far as, what's that, 20 minutes?
Yeah, it's 20 minutes of the past.
Convenient.
Yeah,
exactly. Just, you know, thank your lucky stars. It's convenient to be in solidarity.
Exactly. Eric, I'm using my platform right now. Thank you so much. Yeah. with my last words will be my platform.
Steve, you should swim across the river to that Look Cinemas at 57th Street the river.
No.
That's the only way you can fucking go to that theater, man, is either you walk 1,000 miles or you take a rowboat.
Yes.
It's really stupid placement for a movie theater. Elsewhere around the box office, this was a cool little thing. The big 4K IMAX release of the anniversary of Princess Mononoke, $4 million fucking dollars, folks.
Yeah. Yes.
Look at that. $4 million on a measly 330 IMAX screens. That is a $12,000 per cap on IMAX screens. Wild number.
It was gorgeous. I saw it at Lincoln Square IMAX on Saturday night. Packed screening. So packed. Uh-huh. So
what did it smell like? Honestly, you can say it. Come on, you can say what did it smell like?
It sucked. It smelled like shit. You can say it.
It's not that kind of anime, Eric. This is like
a lot of trench coats. Was it trench coats there? Black trench coat.
So I go.
Not Attack on Titan. Yeah. That's a different crowd.
Exactly. Very different. I don't think any public bathroom should have a push open door. You're asking for trouble, right? Because so I go.
Oh, there's a bathroom story. Go ahead, please.
So I go to the restroom, push open door.
Now is this? Wait a second. We gotta set the scene here. Is this the IMAX bathrooms? The upstairs, the small one?
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, I got closets in this apartment bigger than those bathrooms.
But the door is a little lighter than I expected. I kind of slam it open. I almost clip a small child.
Oh,
child's father. Benny Safdie, no big deal. But he was very, I was like, oh, sorry, man. And he's like, oh, no, it's good. We walked by me. So that's why now I have a Benny Safdie story. And his son is safe until they build a bigger door.
Yeah, dude, until they get that hydrogen door working.
Yeah, that's rubbing elbows with the greats.
Yeah, we had a good time together, Benny Safdie and I.
Yeah, nice. You almost made his kid wear a fucking helmet for the rest of his life. That's amazing. Did you ask him about the fucking Rock movie?
I did not. It was it was a passing thing. He's like, sorry, I almost killed your son. No, that's okay. And we were fine after that.
Well, if you maybe a future movie could revolve around this. You could be like about the bath. It's called The Bathroom Door, right? It's about how he would portray you on screen. That'd be something.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll make a movie about it. It'll be called The Woman Outside the Bathroom Door. So, you know, we have this big residency this summer in the great city of Oxford.
We sure do.
We're playing the Oxford Comedy Festival, three-night residency, six shows. But, Eric, as we learned over the weekend, we have a little bit of a ticketing update. Is that right?
Yes, we have a ticket update for our shows in Oxford, England. If you don't know, we're doing a six-show residency in Oxford, England. And we just got word the Hellraiser show is sold out already.
Look at that.
It's March. These shows are in July. Do not sleep on these tickets, folks. Hellraiser no longer available, but plenty other, you know, are. We've got a lot of other shows. If you're going to that Hellraiser show, by the way, what, you're not also going to the Gleep Glossary
at 7 o'clock?
We're doing Darth Vader live Gleep Glossary. Pull these things together. Listen, now you put your quid down already for that Hellraiser show. Next paycheck, put another quid down for that Gleep Glossary.
And good news, if I can't make it because I die, I'm asking these guys to scatter my ashes in England. I want to make it to England before. So just either I'll be there or my ashes. It'll be a good choice.
Okay.
And don't worry, we're not going to take all the, we'll just take like a couple ice cream scoops full of them.
Yeah,
you know,
nothing
crazy. You know, I don't even spend all afternoon spreading your ashes.
No.
I'm still waiting on this visa. I don't know if they're going to approve me or not. Listen, buy those tickets so then they have to, right?
Yes.
Like, we have to.
That would be the gun to the head right there.
And Eric's totally right. Just schedule, get a resi at some place in town for an early supper. Then you come see this Gleep Glossary about Darth Vader. Look, it's going to be the first ever live Gleep Glossary. So,
that's worth it alone.
I don't know what to tell you.
We have other full episodes we're doing there. Quantum of Solace is another one on the first night. And before that, we're doing Animation Damnation on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Elementary. I got to learn to say that because they say it all the time over there.
They do.
My Dear Turtle.
That's right.
And King Ralph, of course, closing out the whole damn thing with King Ralph, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, oh, yeah, King Ralph. And earlier that same night, we're going to do a live Nexus on just the TNG episode, Sub Rosa.
Dr. Crusher having sex with a ghost.
That's what I hear.
A ghost who her grandmother also fucked. So
what?
Taking Granny's sloppy ghost seconds. We're going to be talking all about it.
Generational fucking. It's amazing.
That's, you know what? That's got to be one hell of a ghost.
Generational fucking. That's what the boomers have been doing top down ever since they took control. Hey, speaking of nothing at all related to that, but in relation to this awesome art that Felipe made for the tour poster, we're not going to be dragging any shit across the pond with us. So if you want to order stuff online from our merch store, y'all, we will sign it for you there, you know, whatever. But just know if you buy stuff from our merch store that you want us to sign, we're going to kick in everything we make from that to the Center for Reproductive Rights all through 2025. Each quarter, we're going to be donating whatever we make off that merch store to that cause due to.
Yeah, stuff.
You know.
Bad stuff.
General gesturing.
Yeah. So head over to whmpodcast.com, click on that tour page, get them ticks, UK and European listeners, and then click on that merch tab, buy some stuff for us to sign for you while we're there. All right, we got some stuff to chat about here real quickly. First up, Chris Cabin, you were teasing it a little bit ago. What is going on with the woman in the yard?
I mean,
other than she looks like she's waiting for the bus or some shit. I don't know what's going on.
I mean, that is what you would hope for in the when you first see her, but that's not what's happening. She is a ghost of some sort. To not ruin the I guess what you would call the twist of this movie.
Sure.
I am limited in what I can say. It's a little heavier material than I think Glitzera is probably up for.
It's like child abuse was going on from the trailer. Am I nuts?
Trauma. A little bit.
Just
yes,
a little.
Because of what is being considered. Like it happens. It opens on the aftermath of a family. The father has died in a car crash.
Yep.
And the mother is alive with their two kids out in the country house, and one morning she wakes up and looks outside the window, and there is a woman in the yard, the woman you saw in the black lace thing, the kind of funereal kind of outfit there.
Sure.
And
From there, it, you know, there's different, like, should we call someone? Should you, you know, that's the original things. But then something is revealed about, I would say, about 45, 50 minutes in. Mm-hmm. And it becomes clear that it's a little bit more grave what is being considered here. It's not as jumpy as Colette Sarah usually. Like, what I usually like about even the bad Neeson movies, there is a certain, like, absurdity to it. Like, and it's open, too. It's not like anybody's hiding it. It's a little silly that Unknown is about what it's about. You, like, the corn shit and all that nonsense. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. This is about something pretty serious, I would say. And I don't think he's quite up for that, taking that as seriously as you need it to be taken, while also trying to be entertaining. He does some interesting stuff with it. I'm not going to say it's a completely waste of time. There is stuff there for completists of Colette Sarah. It is worth seeing. It is towards the back of the catalog, I would say, for sure.
Chris, is this better or worse than Jungle Cruise? Or Black Adam, or anything he did with Dwayne
Johnson.
It's
definitely better than Black Adam.
Okay.
Sure. Okay.
That is not, that is, yeah, that is undeniable.
Oh my God.
But not in the orphan stratus.
No.
Does she reveal herself at the end as a member of Intergang?
She does not. This is not a linked into the I'm sorry to say, not part of the universe as we were trying to build out there. No. It's about something really, really grim and bleak and
great.
So how many stars that one, you know, 1 out of 5 would you give?
One to five. You mean?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Like a 2, 2.5.
Okay.
Area. All right. Where I would go. There's stuff going on there. There's ideas. The visual. You know. There's visual ideas going on. It's not without its talent, but like it's just not something I would tell people to see. Under any circumstances, and I understand. Most of the time, there's a lot of times I don't understand why people are burying the movies they bury. This one, I understand it completely.
Got it.
Yeah, I mean, usually when a Blumhouse movie comes out, man, you can't escape the Blumhouse-ness of it all, and just kind of radio silence on this
because it wasn't. Yeah, because it isn't a silly like the ghost is trying to pull my underpants down or anything at the end of like it's not anything stupid or silly at the end of all of this.
That's a great Blumhouse like presents the ghost is trying to pull my underpants down, an underappreciated horror series,
a sex comedy from Jason Blum. It's not as silly like that. That would be the change, right? That is what the Blumhouse thing would be. It's something a little spooky and a little silly. The spooky's there, the silly is not. And what he's trying to do, he's not up for what it is about.
Makes sense. So that's a skip it from Chris. Here we go. Here, David Ayer's follow-up to The Fantastic Beekeeper just really couldn't do it. This is A Working Man, this next to Statham motion picture here. Steve Sadak, you and I both saw this.
We did separately. Again, I would love to have seen it at Alamo, but the bastards didn't break. It's not very good. I find it like some of the action, the last big set piece is fun. We're obviously setting up for a sequel. This is based on a novel by reactionary writer Chuck Dixon, who wrote a lot of Batman comics way back when I was a lad, which I like those, but he kind of has outed himself as a right-wing crank, which is fun. Which is obvious, which is what we're doing, kind of sort of QAnon adjacent. But it's also like the problem is I almost wish it were. It just he's like, I'm going to find your daughter in about 9.5 days. Like it takes this dude fucking forever to find this girl.
Dude, I was thinking the same thing. You got a 2-hour motion picture here and this dude's doing a lot of side quests. It's like, first, you must get ingratiated with the town's big drug supplier. And that takes 50 minutes out of the movie. And you're just like, there's a poster somewhere with this dude swinging a sledgehammer at people. What are we doing here?
Exactly. That the side quest, the drug dealerness of it all, like the when he's doing two drug deals with blue crystal meth, I'm like, get the fuck out of here. Come on, guys.
Twice. He does two drug deals in this movie, and both times you see him like immediately getting rid of the drugs, which is really funny. It's like he spends thousands of dollars on meth and then throws one bag in a river and flushes another. And I'm like, why do I need this? This is not part of the story of getting this girl. It's like if Liam Neeson is in Taken and he's like, I got a special set of skills. They're working at Radio Shack and you're going to see me have a fucking part-time job for a little bit. And then maybe I'll get to the Takening of it all. Like, it takes so long for this guy to get on the case.
But I think you're the intended audience for this motion picture, as I understand it, are going to get just as hard watching the crack go down into the toilet and be flushed as they are watching the child be rescued from the evil watchits. You know, it's I think those are all things within the fantasy for them.
There's like extended Russian mafia stuff. Then there's like
that sounds
the
right.
The king of the biker gang is involved, and I'm like, ladies and gentlemen,
that feels very like Romero Knight Riders-y kind of like. Yes. There's a part of this movie where like a biker gang like runs into like a Russian mafioso's like meetup house and crashes, and it's like this movie you didn't think would be a movie where someone rides a motorcycle into a house, but it happens in this movie.
Nice.
Yeah, I like that.
It's odd that this movie, considering I said this on Letterboxd, it's co-written by Sly, one of our newly minted ministers of Hollywood or whatever. I was genuinely stunned that the villains in this movie are Russian oligarchs.
Like, yes.
Very much surprised by that, and that the family of the kidnapped girl is a Michael Pena-led, like, self-made, really successful Latin American family. Yeah. Was genuinely surprised the script was not flipped on that.
Huh. Yeah, that is surprising. It is. And also, by the way, I should say a little bit of a lock stock reunion here with Jason Fleming out of retirement.
Yes.
He's looking good these days.
He's looking good. He's got a funny, goofy little Russian accent.
Yes.
Incredible exit to the film, I have to say. And that's the thing, is like buried within
that's in
this,
the middle of that movie, which is a bummer. Yeah. He should be the big guy, I think.
Big time, because he's really good. But like, that's at least when Statham is getting the Statham around the movie, that's great. When it's all this other, like, he's doing stuff, I'm like, of course he's got a dirter of his own.
Yes.
That he's like, we're spending 20 minutes getting this girl into hiding with David Harbour. And I was like, come on. Like, just get going, get to the ass kicking.
And also, like, he's sleeping in his car in the beginning of the movie because he's such a working
absolutely
man. The truck he is sleeping in is worth $75,000. So, like, maybe sell that and get a decent apartment, because it's Dodge Ram. We love Dodge Ram, the new Dodge Ram. It's like, how does he afford that if he's such a working man?
Dude, and it's like tricked out. The whole fucking entertainment system is in this truck. You're totally right. Sell that shit. And also, like, dude, you're saying Michael Pena and his family are like your family?
Yeah.
Ask Michael Pena if you can sleep in the guest house. This dude is loaded. He's a fucking land developer. Mm-hmm. But it's all that prideful, whatever. Yeah. I will say they give him British citizenship. He's British dude. And you know what? Shock of all shocks, for every other movie that tries to make him an American or like an ambiguous whatever, it doesn't matter at all that he was like British Special Forces. Nope. It's all the, you know, all the fight background, his serving in the military, it's all still there. It's all relevant. And he doesn't have to try to hide this real blazing British accent.
Is he like the Felix Leiter to Sound of Freedom guy? Is he like the British version of, like, because I would assume that the Sound of Freedom guy is our James Bond, essentially.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, sure.
So, and he would have to be the other side of it coming
from the
other side
of it, sure.
Like, Britain sends one of their own pedo hunters, and they, like, they rip people out of, like, grocery stores, I assume, up and down the great coasts of this land.
Chris, we also got the Australian version with Life After Fighting. Remember that? Bren Foster.
Oh, man. Yes, but that has an actual great fight.
It does.
The end fight of that movie is fucking nuts.
There is just something going on in the atmosphere across the entire planet where grown adult men want to see children in peril.
They do.
So they can, like,
he's a hero, because you know what? The first time they had, aka their marriage, didn't work out.
So, you know, now they have to save them from child traffickers instead of their wife.
Yeah. I wish all human traffickers were this nice. They put this girl on ice again for about 8.5 days. Like, again, she's just.
Jesus.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Steve, I've never met one. They might be fine. I don't know.
Uh-huh. This is weird, though. I mean, because, like, obviously now, because of the movies that have come out, we're saying shit about Angel Studios and the Caviezel yep. movie and whatever. But I feel like this kind of harkens more to, like, a Taken situation.
It is.
Which okay. is pre that stuff. Sure. Which is why, like, because, yes, it's a both those kinds of movies play in the same world of horror or whatever. But, like, this isn't as, like, diluted and reactionary as I feel the Angel Studios stuff is. Like, it's yeah. dialed back, like, okay. yeah, to a more a 2008 kind of
they're a very
vibe.
Specific group. They're not, like, everywhere kind of
right.
thing.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah. there's Stallone writing credit on it. I mean, I'm sure a draft of this was written in the 80s or 90s or something.
I'm sure.
That's possible. I mean, I don't know when this book came out that it's based off of, which is yeah. the other thing to keep in mind. But, like,
I had
the Stallone,
no idea it was a book.
The Stallone part of it is, I feel all the fucking dirter shit. It was like, yes. yeah, I'll punch it up and give it a little more heart for you. I knew about heart, you know. And
I'm a father now.
Because it does feel like you could have a much more trim film that doesn't have any of the dirter stuff, and it's the same fucking movie.
A book came out in 2014.
Wow. Okay.
So.
All right. Wow. Stallone getting back to work for some reason.
Yeah, but, you know, there's a decent enough supporting cast. Although Michael Peña sort of disappears in the
oh,
movie,
yeah.
which I guess is you had to kill something, because if you're going back and forth with David Harbour and this daughter the whole time, and the grandfather who's, like, cucking him out of, like, yes. Custody of his own child, which is insane. Well, who was that guy?
I have no idea. The mom is dead, okay. not divorced, which I was surprised by.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you've got, like, but the ins and outs of the Russian mafia were, like, are just filled, again, aside from Jason Fleming, who's not in it that much, are filled with nobodies. And I want, like, something.
A face.
Yeah.
The guy who's playing, like, the top dude.
The
and
older
you know he's
guy.
The top dude because he's got a hat on. Yes, that guy. Like, that guy should have been somebody.
Exactly. And right. We're clearly setting up a sequel with that dude and his fucking cane with the skull on it, which is amazing.
Oh, it's kind of awesome. I mean, like, look. A sequence where Jason Statham beats the shit out of a bunch of dudes in an ill-lit room while yeah. Dropkick Movies The Boys Are Back are playing. And, yes. like,
mm-hmm.
I can't fucking hate a movie for that. I'm sorry. And I'm sure a lot of people had a problem with Dropkicks being in the, and I don't sure. give a fuck. So, like, that entertained me enough. I mean,
sure.
It's the kind of thing, like, you watch it at, like, you know, double the speed until a fight happens, and then you can slow down, watch it. Speed yep. it back up again, but there's no, like, to the beekeeper, there's no, like, no. You don't feel that awesome catharsis yeah. that you got with the beekeeper. So for me, I was like, yeah, the fights are good and everything, and the action is entertaining me, but I'm not getting that, like, yeah,
and the world is less interesting, you know what I mean? The beekeeper nonsense, which is stupid yeah. but fun to just sort of
interesting
enjoy.
World building, you yeah. know. I'm yeah. sad to see Michael Peña. I mean, I, the last time I remember seeing him is that Fantasy Island movie.
Yeah.
So
oh,
like,
God.
It's really sad that he's just turning into these movies.
Yeah.
And this is
yeah.
it.
And it's, okay. it's not even like he's given anything to do. Like, it doesn't
no.
team up with Jason Statham.
He just weeps,
find his
you
daughter.
Know. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
that's not good.
Yeah, I was actually, you know, as far as the weeping goes, though, like, he's got a scene where he's, like, drinking, and he's, mm-hmm. like, he's got a breakdown in front of Statham. And I thought, actually, Michael Peña pulled it off. I don't sure. think I'd seen him cry in any. Or, no, doesn't he cry in that terrible crash?
Possibly, yeah.
Does indeed. Oh, yeah. He's crying a lot in that movie.
But, I wanted to see him in it more. The dude, whoever the dude is who played the head biker guy, that guy was awesome. And as a matter of fact.
They're selling him for another movie or something else.
I think so, right? Like, they, speaking of the Romero of it all, like, that dude's got, like, a Ken Foree vibe to him,
yes.
big
yeah.
time, too.
I can see that, for sure.
So that was kind of cool. I'd watch a movie with that dude raised in hell.
Yeah, totally.
You know, whatever. So, yeah, it's not exactly a run out to the theaters, but I'm glad so many people did. Like, I'm glad a movie like this, even though it's not good, is out in the ecosystem, just like the fucking Jesus thing. Like, whatever it takes to bring people to theater, I'm cool with it.
It's an action movie. Yes, it's based on a book, but, like, relatively unknown IP for most people.
Yeah, totally. Exactly. Die Hard is based on a book, similarly, you know?
Right, exactly. Like, unless you're into that world of the pulpy whatever.
Yeah, I will never remember Die Hard's based on a book.
Yeah, and I wonder, because hasn't it also been, that book has been adapted a couple different times, I think, to make a couple different movies?
Yeah, it's interesting that way. I forget.
Is it a coloring book? What is this book?
I thought Die Hard shared its source material with another kind of big movie. I could be wrong on that. But anyway, so that's some stuff, you know, out of the theater. But at home, there's always some stuff to dig through. Because the thing is, man, like, not every actor is a millionaire or a bajillionaire, you know? So, like, you got to fucking pave the driveway. You got to put food on the table. And sometimes that, you know, turns out to be when a secret movie rears its ugly head. Now, Eric, you got the ball rolling on this. This is a kind of like a twofer secret movie, actually, but I think we should start with where you started.
Sure. Let me tell you how this all came to pass.
Yes. What was going on?
So I saw that, I knew I couldn't make it out to the movie theater this weekend. I had a lot going on. So I was like, I'm going to do a secret movie. And I went up and I saw, High Rollers with John Travolta just came out. Look at this poster. My God. How do you say no to that? I'm like, I'm planning my weekend around this thing.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Look at lame Bond over here.
And then I come to find that it's a sequel to another movie called Cash Out. They didn't go Cash Out 2. So I was like, oh, shit, I better watch Cash Out before I watch High Rollers so I know what's going on. And thank God I did, to be honest with you. You need to see Cash Out before you see High Rollers.
Is that right? Now, I gave it my best because Eric was talking about these movies. I did watch Cash Out, but I did not get to High Rollers. Chris.
Are they both directed by Prince of Darkness Randall Emmett?
Yes, they are.
Oh, okay.
Yes, under a pseudonym called like Ivers or something. I have no idea what any of that's about.
Why was that like Burl Ives?
Burl Ives? I have no idea.
Why is he the Prince of Darkness, Chris?
Isn't he the guy that from the reality TV show who's also doing all the stuff with
The guy from the reality TV show. Let's break that down.
Hold on. I'll get it. You guys keep going. I'll get it.
Okay. Someone who sucked had a better one than lame Bond, James Bald.
There you go.
I like that he's embracing the baldness, and he's great. The man is like 70 years old, and he looks fantastic in these movies.
He's looking really good in Cash Out. Yes.
So Cash Out is contained like he's trapped in a bank. It's a bank robbery gone awry.
What is he, a retired cop or retired special forces?
He's a retired thief guy who, like, the movie starts with him doing one last big score.
Got it.
Stealing this, like, sick-looking sports car that apparently Travolta convinced Tom Cruise to let him borrow, like, for this scene. It's
that's
like some
hilarious
super rare car thing. Gorgeous automobile.
Yes.
So Travolta like goes to steal it and he gets like fucked over by Kristen Davis, who's an undercover FBI agent. And that's like, you get a 3 months later deal and Lucas Haas is his brother. And that's the whole like
dimwitted brother.
Yes. Like Lucas Haas tries to do this half-assed bank robbery and Travolta's like, oh geez, what are you doing, man? You can't be doing schemes without your brother.
Hilariously, the Cash Out involves like trying to lift a hard drive full of $600 million in crypto.
Oh. Yep.
Dude, I gotta tell you, hearing Travolta say crypto kind of sucks.
And that's the thing, is why you have to watch Cash Out before you watch High Rollers, is High Rollers opens with you assuming you've seen all that movie because the whole gang is back together. They're on the beach having a wedding. Surprise thing of this Link character, who's like this girl that's like good with computers.
Yeah, she's a hacker of the team.
She's marrying the bank manager from the first movie, and I did not see that coming.
Why would you call Cash Out 2 if that's the case? What are we doing?
I don't know. She's marrying the hostage from the first movie.
The guy with the long hair?
Yeah.
He's
all over this movie, too. But then the budget has been stepped up. This is pretty
okay.
So there's more going on here because John Travolta has to convince the casino world, right, that he's a billionaire, that's a real elusive billionaire within the world of the movie named Donovan Cage.
That's awesome.
So you have Travolta introducing himself as Cage, making me think of a better movie. Chris, real quick, did you find the Prince of Darkness?
Randall Emmett, of course, was indeed. He is from, he's the ex-husband of Lala Kent from Vanderpump Rules. He was on the show for a while. Wow. Also, Prince of Darkness, he was indeed the guy who was Bruce Willis's, who was exploiting Bruce Willis towards the end of his career, making those deals.
I see.
That's why my Prince of Darkness meter was going off.
Because he's the producer on all of these. Look at this shit. Dude, yeah, he's got Midnight in the Switchgrass.
Yes. And he's still, apparently up until even last year, he was still pushing Bruce to work.
He's a kind of a king of a bad movie in terms of producing, but he's also produced good movies. He's like a Scorsese guy. He worked on The Irishman and Silence.
He put in money to a lot of those things. Yeah.
Oh my God. This dude has actually produced, I believe, another two recent secret movies that, Eric, you covered both of them. Armor with Stallone and Alarum.
He is the king of those movies. Yeah. And I think also, I don't know if he is involved with Seban Films, but they seem to work in tandem quite often.
Mm-hmm. Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. That's what they say.
Yes.
Isn't that from that David DeCup playing God? I believe.
Yes, it sure is.
I believe that's
what Timothy Hutton says.
Yes, I do believe so.
So, Andrew, you mentioned Kristen Davis in the first movie. She's been recast as Gina Gershon, which is kind of a trade up, but then she's kidnapped and not in the movie really that much at all. And the plot is a little convoluted because it's a one last job type of thing. This evil billionaire guy, Salazar.
Ooh, I love a Salazar.
Right? He sets them up to swindle this New Orleans casino owner named Zaid or something. Zaid Black.
Yes.
Anyway, there's a reveal that Salazar and Zaid Black are actually brothers, and this is a sibling rivalry for some reason. We do hear that Zaid Black owns the largest collection of authentic snuff films in the world.
Authentic.
What is it, two? Like, come on.
Do we get to see the authenticator at any moment? Because that's the guy I want to meet. Is Steve Buscemi in this as authenticator?
Oh, no, unfortunately not. And unfortunately, you don't get to see those snuff films, but, this is just it's infinitely better than Cash Out 1, but it's still kind of dull and lifeless. There's one point early on in the film, Travolta and crew are stuck on a rooftop, but you can tell they're not filming on a rooftop. They're just, like, shooting them up from the ground like that.
And then they
have to jump off the roof into a pool. So you got them like that. Then you just cut to a shot of a pool, and it's just Travolta jumping in regular style.
we
jumped off. There's no cut to a doll or a dummy or an effect shot.
Man. Just hop a doll off a roof, dude. Please. Let's do it.
What are you doing? Like, I feel like Travolta's got to step in and be like, yeah, I'll give you $5,000 more for a dummy there. You know what I mean? Like anything.
But it was better than Cash Out 1, which maybe is why I rated it 2 out of 5 stars. Check it out.
I don't think he can be given $5,000 if he's fucking borrowing cars from Tom Cruise in the Scientology parking lot. I don't know how that's going to work. The Celebrity Center parking lot.
Well, maybe it's a thing where, like, they were switching. He's like, all right, like, let me borrow that car. You can have one of my jets, you know?
I see.
Because Travolta's doing just fine, man. Sure. He's got his own plane. I bet you anything, because the start of Cash Out 1 is him and Kristen Davis, like, sitting in a private jet. I bet you anything that was Travolta's plane. Mm. And he was like, yeah, come shoot on it. It'll be cool. You know, like, come on.
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, I would not, from what I've seen, I would not recommend Cash Out. But based on Eric's description of what happens in the movie, I might be checking out High Rollers.
You got to do it. I mean, you have to see what these guys are up to these days. And Travolta is not terrible, and he's looking great. I mean, wow. I mean, the man's like in his 70s.
He is trying in that Cash Out. I will say he is giving an actual performance in a movie.
Put him in a working man. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Instead of that fucking weird Ricky Jay dude who wears a cape at the end of the movie, which is a bit of a plus.
Dude, I was laughing. Oh, okay. This guy who I am calling Scumbag the Penguin.
Uh-huh.
That's what he's dressed exactly like the Penguin, but more of a scumbag. Dude, I laughed so hard at the reveal of that guy.
Yes.
I literally almost passed out in my seat in the movie. I got so lightheaded and I got dizzy and I was just scream laughing at the reveal of this guy. He kind of looks also like the fat guy from Borat.
Yes, he does. Nice.
To give you an idea there.
Or just make, who's the guy behind it all? Oh, it's fucking John Travolta. Now I've got a movie,
I don't know.
Right?
You're really selling me on this fat man in a cape at the end of this working man. Yeah. I need to see this movie.
Well, just imagine if it was Travolta still bald, dressed up like the Penguin, dude. Yeah. Like, that would still be pretty cool.
Sure.
Like, honestly, the only thing that guy's missing at the end of that movie is a fucking umbrella. Like, he looks exactly like the Penguin.
Yeah. He's got the cigarette holder the whole bit.
Yeah, if the Penguin is really into sex slavery.
Yeah, which he might be, depending on the...
You never know.
Happens every day.
But that's going to do it for this edition of OSL. But as always, there's a ton of stuff coming up here this week on our wide world of shows. First, though, if you missed it last week, we had two Patreon bangers, including the listener requested The Nexus, where we indeed were talking about that great Tony Todd performance. Someone online said that his appearance as Worf's brother was better acting than this episode. Disagree. That came out. He's great in it. And then also on Friday, if you missed it, perfect time. Get your entertainment for the weekend ready to roll, folks. Never too early to plan the weekend. With The Gamementary came out, or syncable commentary to David Fincher's The Game. Oh, the Michael Douglas impressions of it all. Hell yeah. So that's going on. Those are already out, so you can get those now. Patreon.com/We8Movies, where tomorrow... It's April 1st, but we're not fooling around. We have an all-new episode on Enemy of the State, kicking off a two-episode only tribute to Gene Hackman. Yeah. But this movie, it's a lot better than you remember. We had a great time talking about it, and you can catch it on the Patreon ad-free. That's right. Zero commercials on that fucker. Mm-hmm. And then, closing out the week, this was a total banger in like just the classic sense of a Lifetime movie. We're talking Pocket Dial Murder on Once in a Lifetime.
Yes, yes. And the Big Daddy Dispatch, this was called The Pocket Dial Murders. Incorrectly, it's Pocket Dial Murder. I saw some people had a little confusion about that. I don't think you should be that confused. It's just an extra S and a the thrown in.
Well, also, I do understand, though, that nobody's ever called it a pocket. This is a butt dial murder.
It's a butt dial.
It is a butt dial. It is a butt dial. They just happen to call it that because they can't have butt on the poster.
Yes. So the premise is someone butt dials someone, and on the phone they hear someone being murdered. So now we have to investigate that. Yes. By the way, folks, are you listening to this on audio? Check out our live streams. We're doing this live every Monday, more or less, at noon Eastern, youtube.com/WeHateMovies.
And here's the thing about that extra S there that was in the BDD. Indeed, there's only one Pocket Dial broadcast murder, but the movie Pocket Dial Murder actually contains murders.
There are multiple
bodies dropping in the movie, but only one is broadcast over the phone.
We covered this. We recorded this episode. It's coming out to you folks at home. I do not remember the second murder.
Of course.
it's been filed off.
So don't worry, dude. None of us remember anything about that movie. We'll have to actually re-listen to the episode to remind ourselves if we have to. But that is going to do it for this week's OSL, folks. As always, thanks so much for tuning in. If you're getting this on the audio feed the Wednesday after, like Eric said, catch these live. Like and subscribe to the channel. Hit that notification bell. You want to know when we plan to go on the air each and every time. You don't want to miss this shit. But that's it for now. Until next week, I've been Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadek.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Have a good week, y'all. Bye-bye.